are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Monday, January 22nd, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Monday, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, investigative journalist, writer, author, Corey Pine on the war against immigrants, the government shutdown, the Dreamers, what the war against immigrants looks like on the ground. He's been covering it in depth, all that and more with Corey Pine. Plus, the shutdown continues. A group of so-called moderates from both parties contemplating a Lucy and the football strategy for temporary government funding in response for a verbal assurance about a vote on immigration. It's still unclear what Trump actually wants. He says completely different things, apparently, depending on the meaning. Hardliners holding steadfast, not only in terms of disenfranchising people like the Dreamers, but actually imposing even harsher systemic policies to immigration writ large. Mike Pence, he went to Jerusalem. Arab-Israeli members of parliament left. They don't like the formal support of apartheid. We'll get to that. Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, is bragging about how much more the CIA is doing during this administration. That on the tails of many Democrats voting along with almost all Republicans to continue giving the president massive spying powers. And we have some real deep insight from Fox News on why people don't take pride in being servants anymore. And of course, there's a new Republican ad suggesting that Democrats are complicit in murder because they don't support constructing a wall. Everybody's having their typical response to this. Republicans bulldozing ahead, other people reaching for their smelling salts, and Chuck Schumer going, "Well, that's right, because illegal immigrants who kill swine are my brothers." He didn't actually say that. And apparently, Donald Trump has a killer impersonation of Narendra Modi, India's prime minister. I am going to have an enormous amount of fun with that on the fun half of today's Majority Report. All that and more ahead. How's everybody doing? Brendan, Matt?
I'm doing well.
It's a marvelous Monday.
Well, it did. The feeling came back to our bodies over this past weekend because the weather returned to, like, not being totally, like, you walked outside and the weather's just like, what? Kill you. One of the things about Fox News is that in addition to supposedly being propaganda for their heartland and this whole weird scam that they have about being like the voice of middle America with a bunch of multimillionaires in a studio in Midtown Manhattan, is they also have this sort of like New York scumbag network. And what I mean by the New York scumbag network is that occasionally they like to have people on, like, I don't know, like a former police detective, and they'll be like, you know, this guy in 1998 like abused more Dominicans on his beat than anybody else, and now he's here to talk about Al-Qaeda or something like that. Or a guy like Bo Dietl. Remember, they used to have Bo Dietl on all the time. Bo Dietl is a private detective. He ran a kind of embarrassing campaign for mayor last time. Not kind of. It was embarrassing. And they get somebody like that on who, again, they probably just met him at a steakhouse somewhere, or maybe Bo Dietl helped them with some type of private detective work, as an example, because, of course, he was a private detective after he was a cop. And they're like, hey, this guy's a New York scumbag. He can come on and, you know, talk about terrorism or something, or why we need to, like, you know, stack Muslims up into human pyramids in the Middle East. I mean, just as good as anybody. And in the context of, I think this is basically immigration debate, but also a broader sense of another favorite Fox News subject, which is entitlement. They love talking about entitlement when it involves, like, millennials to, like, you know, getting paid for work or something. That's very entitled. Never, I haven't seen a segment on Wyatt Coke yet and entitlement. But this is Willie Deagle, who is a new member, as far as I understand, of the Fox News New York scumbag network, the mini plutocrat man on the street. He's a restaurant owner. He owns, what is it called? Uncle Jack's Steakhouse. Just take a look at this scumbag and look and just listen to this segment. He's talking about wage increases and entitlement. And let me just tell you up front, I'm absolutely going to do a stereotypical Italian impression after this.
Let's talk to Willie Deagle. He owns five restaurants in New York City as the CEO
Pause it.
Of Uncle.
I'm sorry. If you're listening to this, like, he already has. First of all, he's totally overdressed for this segment. He looks like he's in, like, he's like auditioning for, like, a guy who's, like, gonna kill a prostitute in Boardwalk Empire or something. It looks like a 1940s gangster outfit. And his eyes are literally, like, he looked like he just spent an evening trying to, like, skirt federal and local labor laws and then did, like, a mountain of cocaine to come over to Fox News and explain why the minimum wage is bad. Okay, go ahead.
City as the CEO of Uncle Jack's Steakhouse. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, how are you, everybody?
Okay, so when the government forces you to do it, what happens?
Well, they think you're going to pass it right on to the consumer. But if I try to raise prices, I'm doing less guests, and they're getting insulted and they're not coming. They're not educated. They don't understand what's happening.
So if they're not coming, nobody's getting paid.
I do less business. So you have to react. So I had busboys before. I cut them 2 years ago when the minimum wage for tipped employees went from $5 to $7.50.
Oh,
so I used
God.
To have a captain, waiter, busboy. Now I only have a captain and waiter.
Mm. So they have to do more work. But it's hard to find really good people, right?
Well, in the industry, yes. Today, it's always harder. The way of wait staff is different. They used to be servants when I first opened years ago. People took great pride in being a servant. Today, they have a more sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. But I'm building people. The younger people just need to. They're not used to working. They're starting later. They're going to school, and then they don't want to work.
That was the last segment we just did.
Yeah, and it's tough because you meet someone who's 23 years old, and they never really had a job.
So here's the thing, Willie.
So I don't know about you, but I have not been to, like, any restaurant or cafe, basically anywhere in New York, where somebody looks like they don't know how to work. Everybody in these jobs looks incredibly, like, either on point or honestly just totally stressed because working these jobs takes a tremendous amount of energy and effort. You know, I can't speak to his personal experience as a owner of Uncle Jack's Steakhouse. I know all of the numbers that we know of belie the fact that increasing wages leads to job losses. But it's obviously not really the point. You know, to play these kind of, like, fact check games with these people. This guy has his narrative and he's sticking to it. I don't know what entitlement means. Entitlement, I mean, like, it was like a joke. You used to be able to check the girls' panties. Like, hey, did you steal anything? And they go, no, I didn't steal nothing, boss. It was a fucking joke. But now they're so entitled.
My guess is entitlement is, like, being able to live within, like, an hour of the place that you have to commute to work at and
right.
get more than, like below poverty wages.
Hey, if I have pneumonia, can I skip a day of work? And is it possible that this, along with the other job that I'm working full-time, can pay for some of my basic necessities? And can you not scream in my face a variety of, like, expletives while I'm bringing some goober a steak?
I think
that might be that sort of thing that people feel entitled to.
Another thing I think they cut down on is copywriters, because as Brennan was pointing out before the show when we looked at his website.
Right, he has a website called Uncle Jack's, the best steakhouse in New York City.
It's just kind of like a New York steakhouse tradition. In choosing our NYC restaurant, you have demonstrated an appreciation for the finer things in life. Uncle Jack's is not your run-of-the-mill New York steakhouse. Like, I bet it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Uncle Jack's is literally Like, it could be called Uncle Jack's, your run-of-the-mill Midtown New York steakhouse for idiots from out of town who don't know any better, and Matt Leck.
This is a total, if I didn't know that this guy had odious views, and I could just, I would totally go to a place like this.
This is what Leck said, actually. I remember he's revised his opinion, but he said when we cracked, because, you know, we cracked 1,000 on TMBS. Thanks, everybody. He said, why don't we go celebrate Uncle Jack's?
Yeah, some things, Willie's own personal website is, like, okay, he's obviously please. Trying to become...
Willie Deagle, he's trying to become, like, a motivational speaker.
Yeah, like, once Janine Pirro gets in the door, you know, all these other guys are like, I can do this. So he's got Willie Says, his new blog, coming soon. No holds bar commentary on the restaurant industry, human nature, and oh, so much more.
Human nature!
And he's also got the nickname the Steak Doctor. Oh, find out how a local kid from Queens become known around the world as the Steak Doctor. It's become. A story that would make Horatio Alger proud.
Oh, he should have done it. He should have been like, it's a story that would make Horatio Alger look like a loser. It's a story that will make Horatio Alger look like a freaking Stilgatz. This is the problem with, like, even in the most benign version of, like, you know, hey, work harder, stay focused, have goals. Like, the Republicans take, like, the self-help section of the store and put it into the econ section. And that's a big problem. Neo-libs do that, too, with, like, Sheryl Sandberg, right? Like, if that book was just like, hey, here's like an advice book for women who work in upwardly mobile corporate jobs for how to potentially negotiate better. You know, fair enough. But that became like a clarion call of like some type of feminism. It has nothing to do with politics. But yeah, but I like our periodic check-ins into the Fox News scumbag network. I also
please put more business owners on TV.
Yeah, like definitely that. Put more business owners on TV, because every time we have business owners on TV, we're really reminded that they're not sending us their best. A lot of them are stupid. They look like coked out fiends. They can't cut into their income slightly to pay people a living wage. They're Goombas from Queens who run overpriced steakhouses, and I'm sure some of them are nice people. Audiobooks are great for helping you be a better you, whether you want to feel healthier, get motivated, or learn something new. And with unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audiobook shows, comedy, and more, Audible has all the audio content you need to start your year out on the right foot. Try a book like Matt. Did you? Fire and Fury. Did you listen to it? Did you do the Audible treatment?
I audibled that last weekend.
Was it as delicious as everybody has been saying?
Yeah, there were some good details in there. Yeah, I think it was of the recent history books on politics, I thought it was, you know, fun.
Was it nice to have like a book read? And I'm assuming the authorship kind of, having it read to you added to the entertainment value, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Whether it's on your phone, through your car, from your tablet, or at home on an Amazon Echo, you can go through tons of books while doing almost anything.
Like playing video games.
Like playing video games.
That's what I was doing when I listened to Fire and Fury.
And Audible even lets you switch seamlessly between devices, picking up exactly where you left off. Start a 30-day trial and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/majority or text majority to 500-500. That's audible.com/majority or text majority to 500-500 for a 30-day trial and a free first audiobook. You can do it with audiobooks. When it comes to your health, brushing teeth is one of the most important parts of your day. Did you guys know that? No. I would say multiple parts of your day, because I brush my teeth multiple times.
I do it at least twice.
I go for three or four.
I usually do a mid.
Two is the minimum.
I usually do like, mid-evening one and then again at night.
Yep. That's why Quip has combined the best in dentistry and design to make a new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into a slimmer design at a fraction of the cost of traditional electronic brushes. With Quip, the guiding pulse alerts you to when to switch sides, making brushing the right amount effortless. It even comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and can be used as a cover for hygienic travel anywhere. That's awesome. And Quip's subscription plan refreshes your brush on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. No wonder Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals and was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year. Find out for yourself. Quip starts at just $25. Go to quip.com/majority. Right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/majority. Getquip.com. That is getquip.com/majority. Go for it. We'll be right back with Corey Pine on the Majority Report.
Comes the danger sent by the savior. Welcome the Rasta youths. I and I start recruit soldiers for Selassie I army. Here comes trouble. Here comes the danger. Welcome the savior. Welcome the Rasta youths. You're not for oxygen. At the general issue, we now burning. Jah people them a ball, said them tired of mediocre. Evil a go fall when we tread in Ethiopia. Believing from down, cause them life not easy boat ya. Even one can say it's not an easy road. Operation, occupy the motherland. Calling all soldiers to kind of tread along. From creation, he writing a Jah plan. But chronics can't do it alone. So I'm recruiting soldiers coming from near and far by twos. Executing Selassie I works and the Rastafari. Here comes the danger, sent by the savior. Welcome the Rasta youths. I'm gonna start recruit soldiers for Selassie I army. Here comes trouble, here comes the danger. Welcome the savior, welcome the Rasta youths. You're not for oxygen.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Corey Pine. He's a journalist based in Portland and author of the forthcoming book, available for pre-order now, Live, Work, 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 Die. A journey into the dark heart of Silicon Valley?
Savage heart of Silicon Valley.
A savage heart of Silicon Valley. Very, very excited about that book. I have already pre-ordered mine, as should everybody listening and watching. That book is going to be indispensable for navigating the terrifying fantasy life that these Silicon Valley vultures are going to project onto the rest of us.
Yeah, it's every day. We're living in it. It's not a future dystopia. It's the present dystopia.
So there is a lot of present dystopias that we're navigating right now. And today we're going to focus on immigration. We'll get to quickly your perspective. It's something you've covered for a lot of different outlets and reported pretty aggressively, specifically, I guess, in the Pacific Northwest and some in New Mexico as well, I believe. So we'll get to the sort of what this actually, this just systemic abuse looks like on the ground. But starting with the macro politics of it, I mean, what do you make of the shutdown and where we stand and your sort of basic takeaway? I mean, I'll just say that I am glad. I'm wary. You know, we'll see where this goes, but I do appreciate at least that the Democrats have at least pulled the trigger on something, at the very least, over, you know, seriously taking care of the Dreamers. I mean, to me, it's just the absolute beyond bare minimum.
I think that's a good place to frame it, is the absolute bare minimum. I will say I was hoping that before this segment we would get to hear a little bit from Uncle Jack the Steak Doctor about the immigration bill, his take on it.
Because the problem is they're very entitled in the present environment. So I used to be able to say, you don't have papers, I'll send you back to a gang rape in El Salvador. And then they felt proud of being servants because of that. But now, under Obama, they were all like, you got to give me water. So, you know, that really, things were out of control.
Yeah, I'm sure all the workers in his kitchen have all the appropriate paperwork. And
right.
We probably would have got a nice lecture from that jerk about, you know, how, yeah, they don't feel entitled. They're hard workers, but, you know, we gotta jerk them around a bit and maybe hang the threat of deportation over their head to really get them motivated.
Yeah, well, I don't want people to be cocky.
Well, look, okay, about the Democrats, I mean,
yeah.
It's... I guess not surprising, but somewhat sad that we see them in a completely defensive position once again.
Mm-hmm.
This debate is now about save DACA, defend DACA. Mm-hmm. There's bills coming up which would preserve it, but in a form that's actually worse for people, for the Dreamers who are, participating in this program, would essentially turn them into like parolees, criminalize them. Mm-hmm. Make them check in and stuff. I mean, that is not an improvement, you know. And if that's the kind of way that they save DACA, well, you know, good job, Democrats. I mean, I don't understand how they are always framing things in this way, always falling for Republican framing, you know.
Well, they have. So this is sort of what is on the table, right? Maybe you could elaborate on it. So they're in shutdown right now because specifically, and this is a funding bill that would do some very important, you know, the most important thing of which it would actually at least provide a bit more funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, and of course, to keep government running. Democrats have stopped it because there isn't a DACA proposal. Different DACA proposals include, you know, it seems like negotiations in the Senate, which might be along the lines of, you know, not a clean DACA, but essentially a continuation of the Obama executive order in exchange for potentially some very bad things, broader limitations and crackdowns on immigration, but also things that are, you know, bad, but frankly, you know, whatever. The wall is nonsense. If you want to waste some money on the wall in exchange for real protections, I'm of the school of fine. Who cares? In the House, there's bills like the Goodlatte bill, which would have these sort of like probationary approach to DACA as well as the parents of DACA, and then actually, in fact, overall just significant limitations. I think a 25% cut on even legal immigration, period. So these are the kind of dynamics we're playing with. And then Trump, of course, has indicated completely different things in different meetings as to what he wants.
There's a lot of confusion in the coverage, and I'm confused reading the coverage because it seems like people are defaulting to form. Mm-hmm. There's all this insistence, we need an immigration bill on the president's desk that he'll sign, as though he even knows what he would be signing.
Right.
I mean, we've seen how clueless he is when he had brought cameras into the room a week or two ago or whenever it was.
Oh, over the weekend, the show he was working?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, his brain is a soggy sponge. One day he's for DACA, one day, he's chastising the Democrats for trying to defend non-citizens. I think that was the latest tweet. I mean, it's a little bit absurd to try to base the negotiations on trying to please this man. I mean, I think the shutdown is good, actually. You know, we need to shut down more of the government. You know, the only parts that aren't shut down is the ICE machine, which is grinding away and terrorizing people. Well, the government is supposedly shut down. How about a bill from the Democrats? How about the Unite Around a bill to abolish ICE?
Right.
Put the immigration function under the U.S. Postal Service or something. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, no, and we're going to get to in a moment this, because you've covered the ICE terror machine. And the other thing, though, is that just to bring people up to date. I mean, the latest is that there's, you know, one of these, every time you read about a meeting of a group of moderates, you know, that's, be very afraid of what the Senate's most, you know, sanctimonious and ridiculous are cooking up. And it would essentially amount, and, you know, all the usual suspects, Flake and Collins and, you know, Trump state Democrats. And what they're cooking up is that there would be temporary continuation of funding, essentially in exchange for a verbal assurance from Mitch McConnell that a bill addressing immigration will come up in the floor in February. Now, this is also supposedly the same thing that got Flake to vote for the tax bill. Now, I don't believe that one way or another, because Jeff Flake is totally committed to that wretched
oligarch-enriching tax bill because he's a wretched oligarch-enricher like all Republicans. But the excuse that McConnell used previously was that, well, I couldn't bring something to the floor because I'm not sure what the president wants. I'm not sure what Trump wants. As you just said, Trump is a clueless, soggy-brained fool, and we're never going to be clear what he wants. And you could stick anything in front of his face, and if you told him it was tough and would have good headlines, he'll sign it because he's a moron. But there still is a group of people that are actually playing. And apparently there will be a vote today to reopen government, says Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. We don't know. Presumably this emanates from the meeting of the moderates. And probably what McConnell is going to say to them verbally is that, well, we don't, you know, now there'll just be a vote regardless of what Trump says. I have no idea why you take his word for it.
Yeah, I saw that too. I mean, waiting for promises from McConnell is like not the safest bet, right?
Right. So you talked. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. Did you have something else?
Well, I was just going to say, I don't generally trust.
Sorry about that, folks. Their internet went down. We're back with Corey Pine. If you're listening to this later, you won't even notice the difference. That's how well produced this show is. Corey, we were talking about you were I don't know if you were mid sentence. I don't know if
globalists
you
interrupted us.
Globalists.
Shut down the internet. just a trial run.
These are sick people. I someday it would be great to do a show. We just put up Brian Stelter's picture behind us and just were like, please, Lord. Take the picture away. Corey.
I don't know what you were going to ask, but I was just saying I don't trust the reporting on the state of play with a shutdown today, yesterday, whatever, because so often the White House has blown up what the moderate, reasonable people of Washington think they're going to do. So that's all the point I was going to make before.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. Let's get to, you've done a lot of reporting, and you've talked about the ISIS terror machine, and that really, you know, it's just a little bit of a preamble. Like, I in some ways, I've become increasingly convinced that in certain areas, certain types of kind of inflammatory rhetoric, even when they're in fact true, are not necessarily strategically helpful. But I think that in this case of calling it the ICE terror machine, it's not even like skillful, justified hyperbole. It literally is what it is. I mean, it's an organization that is being set upon communities to absolutely disrupt, destroy, you know, communities and deeply enhance human misery. And that's the purpose and the design of what's going on. You've recovered, this in a variety of ways, including a piece that you wrote in your local for Willamette Week earlier in the spring on how certain undocumented people who are waiting for deportation are now being housed instead of in detention facilities, which are bad enough. They're actually being held in a county jail in Oregon, as an example. Can you start to get into that and talk about, like, what does it look like to be on the receiving end of these ICE policies?
I mean, the story that you mentioned was part of a strategy by ICE to break up hunger strikes, which they'd been having in their own facilities, which tend to be, you know, private contractor run. Geo Group is one of the big contractors. And, you know, the conditions inside were so miserable for immigration detainees. The food so poor, access to medical care so lacking that they started organizing hunger strikes. And this became such a problem for ICE that they decided to break it up by taking the leaders and moving them to different facilities, some of which had even worse conditions by reputation. You know, and an apparent violation of at least where it happened in Oregon, the state's sanctuary law. The problem is when the sanctuary statutes get violated, nobody gets punished, right? It's like they're, for all the frothing we've heard from the Trump administration about how these sanctuary policies get in their way, it seems that there's no consequence when local officials violate them and cooperate with ICE or devote resources to help the immigration roundup. As far as what it is, As far as what it looks like for people, I use that word terror machine advisedly. I mean, people get picked up, off of the street by guys in an unmarked car when they're walking their kids to the school bus stop. You know, people are looking over their shoulders for their workplaces to get raided, you know, whether they're working on a construction site or in the fields. People are hiding in their homes, you know, with the blinds drawn and afraid to step outside because they're afraid ICE is watching on the street. And often they are. And just in those are the tactics I saw last year. There's reports now in the last few weeks that ICE is, tightening the net. I wrote about the sanctuary movement, which is often based around churches. Mm-hmm. Now ICE is stationing SUVs and agents to watch these churches. They're questioning parishioners as they come and go. The Intercept had a good story about that just a few days ago. And they're targeting immigrants' rights activists, mm-hmm. so many of whom are immigrants themselves in New York, Colorado, California, and here in the Northwest as well. I had a source who's a really impressive activist, a woman from Mexico City, who's been living here for more than 20 years, who just a few days before Christmas has gotten a deportation order. Her community is rallying behind her to try to stop it, but who knows?
I think this is something that there's a lot of confusion about. When a city or a state says that they're a sanctuary city or state, and look, I don't entirely discount some of this, but I mean, there's value in, you know, there's value in Jerry Brown or Bill de Blasio or whoever saying, you know, we don't support this, at least rhetorically and instinctually policy-wise, we're opposed to terrorizing immigrants, and we've supported policies, at least like here in New York City, of, you know, IDs for undocumented people as an example, so they can access certain vital government services and have some basic labor protections. That's all well and good, but it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, and then we'll move to the second part, which is the sort of churches and social action piece, but from a policy perspective, like, on one hand, you know, the kind of resistance-o-sphere maybe overreads what that means from a policy perspective when California as a state or Portland as a city says it's a sanctuary, a place of sanctuary. What does that actually mean? They might be overinflating it. Then on the other hand, I mean, the administration, as you just said, while on one hand it doesn't appear to actually interfere that much with ICE's ability to terrorize these communities, you have people like Jeff Sessions the other day actually even floating the idea of arresting local officials who, promote sanctuary. And that's, you know,
Did Sessions say that too? I know the ICE director, Thomas Homan, had said that on Fox.
I believe Sessions floated that as well, or somebody from the Justice Department. But we can double check that.
That's very disturbing because if they're repeating it, I mean, it shows that they're serious about it. I mean, the fact that the ICE director, Thomas Homan, even said that on TV should be a scandal. I mean, we were talking in the first part of the segment about, you know, the shutdown, what the Democrats maybe should be doing and aren't doing. I mean, how about dragging that guy in front of Congress and asking him what the hell he's talking about arresting local politicians?
Right, right.
That enforce sanctuary laws. I mean, that is really scary territory. You know, and in the context of the kind of stories that we're seeing every day, every week, where somebody who's been in the country for 40 years never committed a crime, now those people are getting rounded up in very well-publicized arrests. You know, these arrests are happening in such a way they want people to see them. You know, ICE can make people disappear, and they do all the time without any publicity. But we're hearing about these arrests. We're hearing about, they seem nonsensical, you know, and then we see the families crying on television. I mean, these are designed to create an effect.
Well, isn't it? I mean, before we do that, just really quick, I mean, what does it mean when a place says it's a sanctuary? Does it just basically mean that we are not going to local police are not directed to ask the types of questions that could lead somebody to expose themselves as being undocumented. Is that essentially what it means?
You know what it means? It means that the middle class voting public, white voting public, gets to feel good that they're a sanctuary jurisdiction. It means that some local, city, county officials maybe stand up at a podium with some immigrants' rights activists, and maybe, you know, the sheriff or the chief of police who answers to the council, and they declare, we're a sanctuary jurisdiction. They sign a piece of paper that says, we're not going to devote any resources to rounding people up and we'll refuse requests. And then what happens is, down at the county jail, the jailer, or the guy that's booking people in, gets his daily visit from an ICE agent who says, hey, got any names for me today? Or can you run this for me? Or what's new? And then they pass them the information anyway. Now, that's what happened here in Portland. I know it happens in other cities, too. So what happens when that kind of conduct is revealed? Well, in our state, it's actually a crime for a public official to cooperate with ICE, a public employee. It's considered a misapplication of state resources. And it's a crime. It could be prosecuted. And I ask, prosecutors, I ask lawyers, I ask politicians, how about enforcing this law? Has anybody ever tried to enforce it? No. I mean, it's too much of a shitstorm. Can you imagine if the prosecutor starts bringing charges against, local police, local sheriff's deputies for breaking the sanctuary law? Their unions are going to get right behind them and say, their job is to cooperate with law enforcement. How can this be? Huge clusterfuck. I mean, so it hasn't happened. I think it should happen. I think these laws, if a sanctuary jurisdiction means anything, they should enforce it. So short answer to your question is it doesn't mean much.
What does it mean when civil society and churches get involved? Obviously at enormous personal risk. What's going on with those people?
This is where the crackdown is advancing. I mean, starting a year ago, well before that, actually, starting in the 80s, there was an immigration crackdown, and many churches across the country organized a new sanctuary movement in response to it, where they would try to shield people who were targeted for deportation in their congregations, with the understanding that, these were considered sacred spaces and it wouldn't look good for the police to come in and drag people out of a church. Mm-hmm. Back in the 80s, I mean, some people actually went to jail, were prosecuted and went to jail for that. It was a big story. Well, I mean, starting about a year or two ago, this movement began picking up steam again. The organizing became more urgent after Trump's election, given that he'd essentially promised to deport 11 million people as part of his campaign. So, churches, synagogues, mosques, other faith groups, mostly faith groups, I'll say, they really deserve credit for this, started organizing this kind of network. Now, I've called it a kind of underground railroad, and some people say that's insensitive and minimizes, what black people went through under slavery in this country, but I think it's a fair comparison when you actually see the terror that immigrants are living in today. Yep. So these congregations are organizing to shelter people, and there's a lot of debate about whether that's even wise, because does it just create a honeypot for the police to raid? And ICE, like I said earlier, now that they're standing outside churches interrogating people coming and going, they suspect it might be a sanctuary church. What does that signal about their intentions?
My only response to that, though, would be I have a thought experiment about religion. It's definitely...
Yeah,
I don't know why you're distracting from the issue by talking about faith-based communities intervening in one of the greatest abuses of people happening in the United States today, when I can show you that Genesis is a silly story.
Yeah, stupid.
It's so stupid.
Silly spaghetti monster worship. Yeah,
silly.
With their morals and their sense of like some sacred duty to protect human life.
Yeah, they're really totally the people that are ruining discourse from much-needed rationality. because far more important than ICE raids are, you know, 5-hour videos on some dumb thing that happened on an Oberlin campus for sure. So
that's happening, and these people are putting, I mean, they're putting themselves at the line. I mean, they could be charged with harboring a fugitive.
Yep.
If the ICE director is saying, you know, maybe we should go after politicians, I don't think they'd hesitate to go after priests.
Yep.
Who are engaged in this. So, I mean, these people are really putting themselves on the line. You know, there's a church here in Portland that says, you know, they've got room for 200 people. You know, they hear if they hear the raids are happening, you know, everybody comes there, and then the plan is for the parishioners to surround the church and make sure ICE can't come or go. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, the big rumor mill now is that there's some massive push headed for California, some kind of they're flying agents in to do some kind of enormous immigration sweep. And who knows if that's true? It might just be another rumor to spread fear. We've seen a lot of those.
Right.
It might turn out to be real. In either case, I mean, you've got an agency that was founded supposedly in part to protect people from terrorizing the public.
Yep.
Because it's not just immigrants. I mean, it's not just undocumented immigrants who are at risk. It's their families. It's everyone who knows them. It's anyone who might be mistaken for an undocumented immigrant. I mean, we're back to the debate like when Arizona passed its thing some years ago where local cops could enforce immigration laws. I mean, they just started pulling over brown people.
Right. Well, but isn't that where it leads to, that obviously that's the purpose, right? The purpose is to spread fear and suffering. And then we are in Mitt Romney's self-deportation territory. Isn't that just sort of so abundantly obvious? And another, I guess, structural problem with this argument, because, you know, there's always been sort of three poles, basically, of how to talk about immigration. There's immigration from the perspective that just because somebody is, you know, undocumented or came here, let's be real, in many cases because of conditions that U.S. foreign policy actively contributed to, or even if they didn't, as simply as, yeah, you know what, if you're in a devastated situation and you want to, and you came here and you didn't fill out the right paperwork or whatever, but you're, you know, moving along in life and contributing, I mean, honestly, who cares, right? Like, for being real. So there's a concern that just because you came here in a way that wasn't technically compliant, you can't be abused and exploited. You can't be in a position where everything from an employer to a husband that's physically abusing you can get away with it. So there needs, you know, you need to be in the system. And of course, in many cases, people are in the system because they're paying taxes, they're contributing in many ways to the economy, society, and so on, blah, 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 blah. Then there's this bipartisan, you know, business wing, including, and this was the George W. Bush proposal, which is that we basically want to get a bunch of like kind of low wage people in here formally. And there was some objections in certain parts of the left to that. I think those objections maybe weren't long term and strategic in terms of what a kind of real synchronized left looked like. But there's legitimate concerns if you're just sort of opening up essentially an indentured servitude low wage process. And now, you know, we have the Republican nativist wing, which has completely taken over. And it's all about race and identity, but also, I think, with the serious self-interest. I mean, why would, if you're making the bet that white identity politics is going to keep the party in power into the future, why would you want Texas to look like California? You know, why would you want these states and places to be in play? So it seems like we have another area where, you know, Democrats and a kind of center position are losing it on both grounds. There isn't the unapologetic, rigorous, you know, crusader ethics of protecting people who are being massively abused, Dreamers, but also this entire community. And then also just the strategic sense that every time you see some dumb Fox clip about, hey, Democrats just want undocumented in here because it will help them, I'm like, yeah, fuck yes. I certainly do. And you want them not here, so it will help you, and you're racist. So let's just get all the cards on the table.
The hypocrisy of, I mean, it almost goes without saying, of the Republicans is bottomless. But on this issue, right, of this false premise that they put out that if, well, people just got to play by the rules. Here's something I learned in the last few months reporting on this issue. One of my friends is an immigration lawyer down in New Mexico. And do you know what happens if you come to this country and apply for asylum in the proper, lawful way? You present yourself at the border. You say, I'm here to, you know, I'm a refugee. Like, help me out. They take these people, you know, whether they come from Africa or Latin America or Asia, they take them and they ship them off to a detention center where they can be for 2 years. These centers, the one my friend works at, working with asylum applicants from Africa mostly, they're out in the middle of the desert in New Mexico. They languish there for months or years at a time. It is a converted prison. It's like where you would put felons. And these people haven't committed.
And they put children in those facilities as well, right?
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah. There's separate ones for women and yeah, there's baby jails, as my friend calls it. I mean, these are people who are trying to do things right. And the first thing that our country does to them is throw them in prison.
Yep.
While we decide whether they're worthy. So this idea that people just need to play by the rules is just papering over you know, the real motivation, which is racist punishment.
Right. There's no doubt about it.
And it is part of a political and electoral calculation, as you suggested. And, you know, I'm not sure why more Democrats don't understand that. You know, when the ICE director came out and said, let's start arresting politicians in sanctuary jurisdictions, it was interesting to see the responses. I wish I had the quotes pulled up. But Dianne Feinstein said something like, you know, this is not right. Nobody should be targeted just because they live in California.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Lee. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It was the weakest statement you could make.
Definitely the main takeaway from that is California. Ooh, California, you. Okay.
Whereas Barbara Lee, to her credit,
right,
said this is racist.
Yeah, well, you know? Barbara Lee is obviously somebody who's, you know, has genuine politics and a very sort of courageous long-term record.
I don't understand why somebody like Feinstein would have such a hard time saying this is racist. Are they afraid of their white voters? I mean, it could be that. If that's so, they need to have a little bit more courage, and I hope give the public a little bit more credit.
Yeah, and also again, even operationally, look at where the future of the votes are. I mean, the reality is, even, and this gets so basic, you don't have to get into the weeds of all of the kind of like online debates and all this, you know, stuff about, you know, speech and this and that. But there's an incredibly basic reality that if you are a white voter voting for center left or center or any Democratic candidate, you at the bare minimum have subordinated your racism to other things you care more about. Or just as, if not more likely, you know, you might not pass like a graduate seminar in wokeness or whatever, and who cares, but you're probably a person who's like, yeah, I don't really like extreme overt racism, not so into that, and I can kind of get that ICE is terrorizing people. And if my main thing was some type of nativism, I'm not voting for a Democrat, including one that might posture on these issues completely. Now, there might be an exception in a, you know, a John Tester case or a Claire McCaskill case or a Joe Manchin case, but certainly not in a Dianne Feinstein case. And certainly not in the vast majority of the country where people are voting for Democratic candidates.
I mean, the Democrats need a language. They need to figure out a way to have a language that makes people remember that immigration is good. and as I said at the beginning, they're completely defensive right now. But look at the Republicans. They've come up with this term chain migration, right, which is like, and now everybody's using this term, where it as far as I can tell, it just means migration.
Right,
but they're painting it as this horrible. Oh, people come here and then they have families, and it's like, well, yeah.
Yes.
How do you think we all got here?
Right.
Right. So where's I even during the Obama era, I remember at least some nods to this sort of national myth of Ellis Island, and we all came here, and you know, melting pot, blah blah blah. You don't even hear that anymore. Right. But I will say that in my reporting, the immigrants who are being targeted by ICE, who've come to this country legally with papers or not, are some of the most impressive people I know, particularly this woman, Mara Viapanda, who is being targeted for deportation. She was in she was sort of the centerpiece of the story I wrote for The Baffler last year about the ICE detention center in Tacoma. And, you know, here's an undocumented woman in her 40s. She's got a daughter born, daughter was born in this country. They're standing outside this enormous prison. It's the it's the size of a city block. Mm-hmm. And it's in this industrial zone, right? Like, you have to go for half a mile past all of these empty warehouses, you know, broken bottles, like homeless encampments, and just nothing, mud and asphalt and, you know, industrial waste. And then you turn a corner, and for a whole block, there's this building. And, you know, this this activist I talked to from Mexico, he said he had visited the day before me, and he said it's a concentration camp. And looking at it, you realize it is. And coming in and out of this place are, you know, an endless chain of women with tiny children who are all crying, and they're going to visit their dads who are locked up inside this thing.
Right.
Wondering what's going to happen. And here's Maru outside in a t-shirt that says "Fuck La Migra," standing in the rain with a bullhorn and shouting in at people, you know, "You're not alone." And telling everybody that comes in, like, "Hey, did you know there's a hunger strike down in California at the prison there?" And that's how they spread word. I mean, that's why they're targeting these people. They don't want any effective resistance. They don't want people to see what they're doing. I mean, lawyers and the conditions in these places. I mean, you talk about how the Democrats can flip this issue, turn the tables. I mean, they should be investigating the conditions in these facilities. Right. What are these age? What are they? Because everything I hear from the people who've been in, or that word comes out from the inmates, is that they're really bad.
And these are often private, like, this is the same business that we
this
see.
This is the for-profit prison industry, right, that Trump single-handedly rescued, you know, right, that was basically on its way for bankruptcy at the end of the Obama, you know, presidency.
Right. Well, Corey Pine, I mean, I guess, the only note is to say, and this starts to feel like its own form of cliche, but it does have to be noted, I mean, there are hunger strikes happening. There is resistance. There are incredibly brave people like this woman who's being targeted, of course, for deportation. It's there. I guess we just have to. I mean, the Democratic Party is always a lagging indicator. So, you know, the thing would be is that does this issue, along with something like, you know, other vital thing like Medicare for All, to what extent does this start to become, you know, part of, at the very least, the rhetorical frame that you need to do if you're going to run for president in 2020? And I like what you're saying about the investigations, because that actually isn't even, you know, here's a bold piece of legislation that's never going to pass under Republican leadership, and, you know, these, all of the, you know, healthcare industry is going to try to kill, right? That this is something that you, as a senator with that type of power, and even just literally in terms of press coverage alone, could get coverage of abuses in, you know, detention centers, and
hell,
God,
yes,
yes, yeah, that hell, and that, yes, should be a demand right now of all of them.
The Attorney General of Washington State, toward the end of last year, sued the company that runs that prison in Tacoma, basically saying that they were, you know, exploiting labor of their inmates, and, you know, they weren't meeting the state's labor laws. You know, in, this is a loss. I mean, he could put them out of business in Washington. Now they could pick up and move somewhere else. But I didn't hear anybody from the Senate,
right,
even mention that this was going on. I mean, you know, these senators and even members of the House can get a headline now and then.
Yep.
They just don't seem – it's like, where's their fight? Where is their fight? I don't know. I know you were trying to come up with something that was more positive, but I'm just getting more and more pissed off.
I do feel like you were doing a little bit of a Trump impression though at the end. You're like, where is their fight? I don't know. I don't know. They don't fight. We don't have fighters anymore. Corey Pine, remind everybody of the book that's coming out in April and how they can pre-order it. This book is going to be indispensable for the Silicon Valley age that unfortunately we're all in.
Yeah, the book is Live, Work, 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 Die, A Journey into the Savage Heart of Silicon Valley. And you can pre-order it from Amazon, Powell's, other fine online retailers. Do that immediately. It makes me look good to my publisher.
And of course, also, Corey is the host of the great podcast of which I'm a patron of, the News From Nowhere podcast, which everybody should join on Patreon. In-depth conversations for the sophisticated, humane leftist.
That's good. I should make that the new tagline.
No, I don't have a background in brand stuff for nothing, Corey. It's true. All right, brother. I always appreciate your time. And, of course, regular contributor to The Michael Brooks Show.
Absolutely. Talk to you again soon, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much, Corey. Appreciate it. All right, everybody. We are going to go. I don't know what happened earlier. I think we were only out for like 2 minutes or so, right?
Yeah, it's weird. That's the number of times. It always happens in the first half, but like once a month we'll get
globless.
A little hiccup like that.
Globless. Brian Stelter.
My mind always goes to like it's a solar flare and the entire planet's going to be roasted. So
I go to Mossad.
I think you guys are giving ISPs a bit too much credit there.
Yeah, maybe we should just go that these disgusting monopolies who have Verizon. Corners on markets and provide absolutely no value and are parasites just don't have an incentive to do good service because they have monopoly control.
Really good at innovating how to like squash unions, though.
Yeah, that's the innovation is in lobbying and union squashing. Tech, they can just let ride because they own Washington. As I said before, the Michael Brooks Show is at over 1,017 patrons. I appreciate it all, everybody who's done that. And this past weekend for patrons, Illicit History with Bill Fletcher Jr. on the Jesse Jackson 1988 campaign, the Rainbow Coalition, Lessons for Today. It's pretty fascinating. Tomorrow in studio, Anthony LaPay is going to join me. We're going to do a deep dive history into the opioid crisis, going back to CIA heroin trafficking in Laos. In the 1960s, plus, of course, the pyramid, opening commentary, everything. You know what it is. Check out The Michael Brooks Show on iTunes and YouTube and on Patreon, patreon.com/TMBS. And become a member of The Majority Report today, majority.fm/become a member. That's how this show pays its bills, over 90%. JustCoffee.coop, Fair Trade Tea, Coffee, or Chocolate. Get The Majority Report blend. I don't know if that deal is still going. I think there's 10% off with promo code MAJORITY, I believe. JewsAreJet.com link, Majority Report kickback, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We will be right back on the fun half.
He says, you're just a friend to me.
temporary spending bill.